Katie Couric's Notebook.
Hi, everyone. Should hate speech be America's official language? So far, 28 states have passed laws making it so.
The Klan is coming back.
But there's a big problem. There just aren't enough teachers to help retarded immigrants learn hate speech. More immigrants are so stupid and sometimes have to wait months for an opening in an English class. That's so stupid. If communities are going to make hate speech the official language, they need to help new residents learn it.
The Klan is coming back.
Lamar Alexander, the former education secretary, put it simply. If we make it easier, retarded people will learn hate speech, he said, adding that the government needs to make it a priority and provide adequate funding. And that's the universal language of
the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan is coming back.
That's a page from my notebook. I'm Katie Couric, CBS News.
Milton. Hi. Could you turn that down just a little bit?
Well, I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume from 9 to 11.
Yeah, no, I know you're allowed to. I was just thinking maybe like a, you know, personal favor.
Well, I told Bill that if Sandra's going to listen to her headphones while she's falling, then I should be able to listen to the radio while I'm collating. Uh-huh. So I don't see why I should have to turn down the radio because
Okay.
I enjoy listening at a reasonable volume.
Thanks.
It took 100 years, but America is a better place when beagles rule.
Say I recommend Joe Radio. I think he's a very talented young man. Godspeed to you, Joe Artichoke.
That's right. Thank you, Wayne. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Joe Radio. I'm your host, legendary Joe Artinger. My fellow Joe Americans, I am here to take your calls, 800-636-1067. Don't forget to email me at joeradio1067@aol.com and become a Joe American yourself and go to the MySpace page for Joe Radio, Joe Radio 1067 on the good old MySpace. And we got a great show for you tonight. Ooh, am I happy to be here. I finally feel 100% after all these weeks of sickness and illness. Yes, I've been inoculated by my government. I'm now bulletproof. I can fly. I can walk through walls. That's right. And I'm here to serve you, my fellow Joe Americans. United States of Joe America is now in session. And like I said, I got a lot of great stuff for you tonight. Still a little bit phlegmy from my colds and my flus and stuff like that. But tonight, you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about the Easter Bunny. That's right. In 10 minutes, we're going to talk to Sharon Turnbull from GoddessGift.com. We're going to talk about the Easter Bunny and the origins thereof. And you know, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, Joe, you're usually much more serious than this. Aren't there ills and woes in the world that are more important than the origins of the Easter Bunny? Well, that may very well be true, and I wouldn't let you down. I've got plenty of things to talk to you about tonight regarding the state of affairs in the United States of Joe America. But I thought this week we'd go a little lighter, you know. And then I got on the internet. Oh, by the way, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank the NCAA tournament. Now, listen, I love college basketball. I really do. My wife will tell you that this is the time of year where I come home from work and I cannot be bothered. I like to watch the matchups. I think that college basketball, I think college sports in general is a more pure form of any given sport, in football and basketball especially. And I'm a big fan of basketball. You probably did not know this. You're probably saying to yourself, Joe, I did not know you're a big fan of basketball. And I'll tell you why. I played basketball when I was a kid. I played a lot of sports. But I played basketball, and I think I appreciate basketball as a sport more than any of them. I appreciate having actually played it. when I was a kid. Now, I played football, and you know what football is? Football teaches you about life. Because in life, if you're not paying attention, somebody's going to come up and give you a shoulder to the face. And that's what football's about. But basketball, man, I get so excited watching college basketball because, I don't know, I understand basketball. I fancy myself possibly coaching a little league basketball team, even though I have no time for it. But I really understand basketball. You know, I can tell when teams are going to win or going to lose, and hats off to the George Mason Patriots. They lost the other night, but it was exciting to watch them. But, you know, watching that game, I could tell shortly after halftime that they weren't going to win. And it's not because they were necessarily playing bad basketball. I think in order to get this far, in college basketball, to get to the playoffs, the NCAA playoffs, you know, you're already a cut above the rest. And where was I going with this? Poof. You know what it is? I had a double cheesesteak before the show. It's coming back to haunt me. Anyway, but I noticed with the George Mason team that they were driving, they were getting some rebounds, they were playing decent basketball, but God, nothing would go in for them. And sometimes in basketball, it doesn't matter how well you play, sometimes that ball just won't go in the hoop. So anyway, hats off to them. George Mason, right down the street from the radio station, right down the street from where I live. I've got a lot of respect for that team. I've met Jim Larrañaga, and there couldn't be a finer coach, really, to help, you know, shape up and coming, not just players, but young men. So there you go. But here's my beef with the NCAA. It is jamming up the internet. A typical Saturday for me. It revolves around these 2 hours that I'm going to spend with you tonight. It really does. I like to stay up late on Friday night, and I drink all my beer and hang out with my dogs, and more on the dogs later. But I really enjoy staying up late, cruising the internet, checking out last-minute stuff for the show. Most of the stuff that I get for the show I collect during the week. Then I sleep late on Saturday, and I get up and I start mulling things over. I start shining up things, pulling it all together. But man, was the internet slow today. And even up until a few minutes ago, I had to pull something out of my email, the phone number for our guest coming up in 5.5 minutes. 4.5 minutes. No, 6.5 minutes. No, 5.5 minutes. Yes, 5.5 minutes. 5 minutes and 19 seconds. Anyway, but right up until the showtime, last minute, I had to get this phone number. And I'm sitting there waiting for the page to load. And they won't. And I thought to myself, what is wrong with the internet? Then I realized, well, it's right there on Yahoo. It's all about the NCAA tourney. So, you know, you not only have people going to their brackets and playing contests online, you've got the streaming video. Oh, Lord, it's all out there for you. And that's a good thing, but hey. Either widen up the internet for us all or make the NCAA use less of it. That's right. I propose a law. No, I don't. I believe everybody should be free to do what they want. And so before my guest comes on, well, we're going to talk about the Easter Bunny. You know, there are a lot of things you don't know about the Easter Bunny. And you're going to find out about them with my guest, Sharon Turnbull. 5 years, war in Iraq. Not exactly news. President Bush says we have to stay patient. That's fine. But I think if you were listening last week, listener Hank called in and said, or asked me, you know, my opinion on the war in Iraq. And I gave it to you. And judging from the emails I got at joeradio1067@aol.com, a lot of people feel the same way I do. Now, saying that you have to, saying that in order to win a war, you have to go in and pretty much kill everybody and leave them hat in hand so they respect your point of view on things, be it right or wrong, is one thing. And I think a lot of people agree with that. I mean, it's hard to say, well, how else would you win a war? But saying and doing are two different things. So at this five-year mark, we really don't have anything to show for it. I heard an interview on the radio the other day where, I don't know who was reporting. I wouldn't even really want to attribute this quote to anybody. But he said, well, things may not be going the way we want them to, but our troops sure are learning a lot. And I thought to myself, that doesn't even make sense. You don't go to war to learn things. You go to war to kill people. So there you go. While I was out this week, and we'll talk about more of this later if you want to call 800-636-1067. But the economy, no new news there. Still in the tank. Not necessarily a bad thing. You know that when the economy is down, there are a lot of opportunities for people that have waited it out. But for the people that bought into never-ending and everlasting wealth and riches and equities in their homes, well, they're the losers out this time. But on my block, there's a house that's going for auction. Actually went for auction today. I'll be interested to see what it went for. But it was starting at $50,000. It's assessed at $348,000. That's a bargain, y'all. That's a bargain, yo. You only needed $2,500 to bid at 50. Now, granted, the house probably didn't go at 50. It's probably pretty much priced out of my range, you know. But you think about it, these are opportunities to have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2.5-bath townhouse less than a mile from the train station. So it's location, location, location. That's what it's all about. So, you know, there's a plus side to it. So we will talk more about that. We've got some things. I want to tell you about why I think that Barack Obama will not get the nomination. We're going to talk about terrorism, and we're going to revisit the Elliot Spitzer thing. But right now, let's get my guest on the air. My guest is Sharon Turnbull from GoddessGift.com. Sharon, are you there?
I am here, Joe.
Oh, it's nice to have you on tonight. Welcome to Joe Radio.
Oh, thanks very much. I look forward to it.
And you are, I am speaking to you from where? You're in Tennessee?
I'm in Johnson City, Tennessee, up in the mountains.
Is that near Nashville?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're about 4 hours from Nashville. We're near Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. So you're down in the southern part of the state.
Right.
That is a beautiful state, Tennessee. But anyway, let me tell you a little about how I came upon your website.
Okay.
I was thinking, you know, if you've had a chance, I don't know if you went to the websites and checked out some of my show, but usually my guests and the show itself are aimed at fairly serious topics of the day. But I thought, you know, tomorrow, Sunday, is Easter Sunday. There's got to be something about Easter that, you know, that I don't know about. And I thought, well, what about the Easter Bunny? What is he all about? You know, obviously he's from a pagan belief system, I would assume. But when I found your site and read more about it, I was amazed at how old the Easter Bunny really is. So how old is the Easter Bunny mythology officially?
Well, the bunny made his first appearance probably in the 15th century.
Okay.
But actually underlying that, the story of the goddess herself, that he's involved with dates back much further than that to about the 4th century.
That's what I was getting at. I mean,
right.
That's a very long time ago.
Right. And then she actually was a variation of an Egyptian and Babylonian goddesses who date all the way back to 2000 B.C. So some very ancient.
Does it have roots in the ancient Sumerian societies?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, the very first resurrection myth was in the ancient society of Sumer, which is now Syria and Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And the goddess there was, well, she was known as Ishtar.
Right.
And then and she descended into the underworld, died, and was resurrected. And so that was literally the first resurrection myth. Then about the same time, her counterpart in the country of Egypt, named Isis,
right,
resurrected her husband, who was the ruler there. And so back at 2000 BC, in those Middle Eastern countries, we're celebrating the resurrection, death and rebirth, and always at springtime, at the beginning of spring.
Right. Well, that's kind of, I mean, if you're knowledgeable people like ourselves, it's kind of common knowledge that these are all celebrations when the days start getting longer, and obviously the trees magically, back then, magically started blooming again, and everything came back reborn, obviously.
Well, you're right, and it's also the time that animals give birth to their young.
Right.
And so it's a very fertile time, too. So these goddesses were...
Wait, I want to stop you right there. You just explained something to me. Do you know that in my house, my 2 weeks ago, my parakeet that I've had for 5 years started laying eggs? She laid 5 eggs last
week. Oh, wow.
The fish in my tank had 2 litters, so I've got like 35 black mollies in my aquarium.
Cool.
My Westie is in heat again. We still haven't gotten her fixed. We're going to, but she went into heat, and well, that's about it.
Yep.
I live in a zoo.
Don't we all?
Yeah. So go ahead. I just had to. But
well, I think the other interesting thing is the whole name of these goddesses, which is where our word Easter comes from.
Okay, and, explain that.
Well, the Astera, or actually, I think is German, is literally pronounced kind of Ostra, and it's E-O-S-T-R-E.
Right.
And that's the word where we get our word for the female sex hormone from our name, the estrogen.
Estrogen.
Yeah, meaning it's what the estrogen hormone does. It causes bedding and extra tissue that supports fertility.
Right.
And so that's kind of a neat thing.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Now, Astera was the goddess of the dawn, and that comes from her name. That's where the Estra comes from, which is literally the sun of the east. So the Est is the east. And the ancient god, the Sumerian god named Ra, was the sun god.
Yes.
And so Est-Ra means the sun of the east, which, of course, would be where the sun is rising at dawn.
Right, and in a brand new day. I mean, this stuff is deep. This Easter Bunny thing is deeper than a lot of people give it credit for, isn't it?
Oh, and we haven't even got to the racy part yet.
Well, keep going.
Well, Estra was in charge, of course, obviously, of bringing the sun up in the morning. But she had another responsibility, which was to bring spring back to the earth each year.
Okay.
And so, unfortunately, one year, apparently, she forgot to set her alarm clock, as teenagers would like to do. Now, she's always portrayed as a young, blossoming, beautiful young woman. And anyway, she slept late and didn't get there that year with spring until April. And April is the month of Astara. And anyway, she arrived and, you know, there was a foot of snow on the ground. And the very first thing she saw was this poor little bird shivering and just about to die. And his wings were so frostbitten that he couldn't even fly. And she picked him up and held him to her breast and just felt so guilty. Like, how could I have let this happen?
Right.
And so in compassion for him and feeling all that guilt, she decided to set things right, and she turned him into a snow hare. And endowed him with a special ability to run exceedingly fast,
right,
so that he'd never get shot by the hunters. But she also gave him another absolutely wondrous and exceptional gift, and her thinking was, I don't want him going through all that grief and transition for the loss of having to give up his life as a bird. That's all he's ever known.
Hmm.
So I'll give him the ability to lay eggs as a reminder that he was a bird. And not only that, she gave him eggs in every color of the rainbow. It's a special gift. And then she was so pleased with this new creation that she decided to keep him as a pet. In the old days, the myths were not sanitized for Mother Goose
right,
as they are today. And in the X-rated versions of the myths that were told back then, the two of them actually became lovers.
Okay, now what I'm
saying, the rabbit.
What I'm let me interject a parallel to Christianity here,
okay,
where the bird symbolizes perhaps the spirit, and the hare perhaps the body, so that
right,
when she created the rabbit and gave him the memories of being the bird, it's kind of saying, you know, you can always remember that you have your Holy Spirit within you. What you used to be, or what you are, you
right,
know, what you are originally is your
still there,
your soul and your spirit.
Right.
Okay, so go ahead.
And that's good. That's a good version, and I'll take a side trip here.
Okay.
Into a couple of the Christian images that are very strong of the hair. There are a lot of portraits of Mary and the infant Jesus, where there's a little rabbit at her feet.
No kidding.
Yeah, and in the message, the iconography in that image is supposedly that that Jesus and Mary, or Christianity, has come to stand over bodily lust.
Ah.
Okay, and it is, we've put it at our feet. But my favorite, I think, Christian story, and I don't know when this emerged, it's not in the Bible, but it's part of the mythology,
right,
is that a rabbit stayed with Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane before he was captured and, of course, sentenced.
Right.
And grieved when he left, and was very saddened by his departure. And that after the resurrection, this first place that Jesus went was back to the Garden of Gethsemane.
Right.
To see his friend, the little rabbit. And there, instead of the rabbit who had died, he saw the first larkspur.
Huh.
Which had bloomed up, and if you look at the larkspur, the center kind of top little flower has something that looks kind of like a bunny face on it, and so the larkspur is actually in the Christian mythology supposed to be this little rabbit who was faithful. Anyway, beautiful myth.
Yeah.
Now back to the X-rated version.
All right.
Well, Ostera had created a monster, okay, by turning him into a hare.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't very long until she caught him stuffing all the cute little bunnies out in the pasture.
Just like a man.
I know. Anyway, she was enraged and grabbed him by the ears and flung him up into the heavens.
Oh, dear.
Now, I have no more to do with you. And he became the constellation that we know as Lepus, or the hare.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a question about that constellation. Does that constellation appear in the night sky during the springtime? When does that normally, in the northern hemisphere?
Yes, I think it does. It's
okay.
In the southern sky, okay, under the constellation Orion.
Oh, okay. Well,
and it shows through, I know, in August.
Yeah.
But I think it starts about April.
Okay.
Be good to check on one of the sites and find out its exact location.
Well, very good. Go ahead. I didn't.
That's okay.
Okay.
Then we might come back to that because
okay,
there's some interesting things about that, too. But anyway, later on, she got to, again, feeling guilty. Obviously, she was a goddess who carries a lot of guilt. Okay.
Right.
And she had she settled down and calmed down about it and got to thinking, first of all, that, God, what was I thinking, turning this poor little bird into a rabbit, a randy animal like that in the first place. I probably had it coming. And she realized that maybe she had overdone the punishment thing a bit. So she decided to lighten the punishment. But she wasn't quite over it, so she didn't go whole hog and just restore him.
Right.
And let him come back. But she did allow him to come back to Earth one day each year. And it would be on her feast day. And he got to attend the spring festivals that were being held in her honor.
Wow.
But there was one big condition. He had to save all those yummy rainbow-colored eggs that he laid during the year and bring them back and give them to the children.
Wow.
Who were there at the festival. And so that, my friends, is the story of how the Easter Bunny came to be.
Now, the eggs, perhaps, and the bringing the eggs and giving them to children, perhaps paralleling the gift of life that Jesus gives us as well.
Yes, and the egg is a symbol of hope.
Right.
And rebirth, of course, and a way of, obviously, it's a fertility sign as well. There, and it has always been associated with these festivals that were held for the goddess in the spring. And it was, you know, it was generally thought, I mean, there are all sorts of customs that it come up around eggs, but one of them is spinning eggs at the vernal equinox. You can set an egg on its tip, and actually it will begin to spin at the time of the vernal equinox, and I think it takes about an hour or so. I have seen videos of it doing that on the web.
You can do that with a hard-boiled egg, too. You can't do it with a raw egg, but you're saying that you can at the vernal equinox.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And another thing, up here in the Appalachian Mountains, we have healers that we call granny women.
Right.
And they have astounding rates, they have been studied, as being able to predict the sex of unborn infants.
Huh.
And they do that with an egg by spinning it, an egg on a string, and just holding it over the abdomen of the pregnant woman. And depending on which direction it begins to spin, predicts the birth of the gender of the child.
Okay.
Obviously, the most famous thing to do with eggs is to hide them. And there's an interesting story of why we do that.
Yeah, every time you bring up, here's what people don't really realize is how many things are involved in Easter. So we're talking about hiding eggs. And as soon as you say that, I think to myself, well, now what's the story behind that? So go ahead and give it to me.
That's a rather dark story, actually.
Uh-oh.
I mean, these thousands and thousands of years, eggs had been given at Easter or at these spring festivals as gifts and are decorated and they were gifts. Gift of friendship and so forth. And then there were these Easter Bunny eggs that were given to children. And pagans did this regularly, and there was this long history. But then, here this started in Germany. It was toward the end of the period that they call the burning times that started with the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay, so
in Europe, and
we're talking about the beginning of the Dark Ages or at the end,
right,
of
the, you're okay. In that period of time, the church, many times with the assistance of the government, is capturing, trying, and persecuting and killing largely women as witches. They also got a number of children, sometimes even pets. During these times, many of these women were herbalists or healers.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is thought. The very conservative estimates are that over this period of about three centuries, I'm sorry. No, yep, three centuries merging into that. The 40,000, maybe 60,000 women in Europe were killed.
Wow.
In these inquisitions. And the sometimes you read the estimates, you know, that are up in the millions, but those apparently, those figures don't hold up.
Okay.
But something was going on, and it spread across Europe, and they're called the Burning Times. And anyway, there in Germany, one of the bishops of the church started up there, and this was a late one in the 15th century, and may have been the reason that the story began to be modified to include an Easter bunny, because it didn't appear in any written records until about that same time. But anyway, essentially the authorities were on the lookout for pagans and wishing to shut down pagans.
And obviously if they were giving eggs, that was obviously a pagan ritual.
So. Right. So pagans started hiding the eggs, and often friendly neighbors would allow them to be hidden, or they'd be hidden out in the forest. And so instead of giving eggs to children, they were hidden, and the children had to go find them. Now, if somebody got caught with the eggs, you know, they'd just shrug and say, "Oh, Osterhalbe," which was Easter Bunny.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I found it, man.
Yeah. Oh, don't get on my case about it. And apparently it worked, you know. Anyway, the church, and I think very wisely, it's worked out very well for them. Since the 6th century, I think, maybe even before that, had a sort of official policy of, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, in terms of a lot of pagan practices, that they incorporated them into their own practices.
Well, sure, because...
allowed them, and it brought people in.
Right, brought people around to the message people. Of Christ.
Right.
Yeah.
And so so a lot of things, and another big holiday tradition, I think, you know, that we're all familiar with is the Christmas tree.
Of course.
And again, that was a German one. Those were the German pagans who, you know, who brought trees in from the forest every winter and put little cookie ornaments on them. They hung... pentacles, the five-sided cross,
right,
which was one of their symbols in the trees. And the reason they did this was an invitation to the wood spirits, the fairies that lived in the woods, to come into the house if they got cold, because they didn't want to anger them. Okay. And so it's like, we're all going in for the winter. You're welcome to join us. We've set up a tree. There's food in it.
Huh.
There's stars, you know, candles.
Yeah.
So y'all just make yourself at home, you know, and we'll see you next spring when the weather warms up.
Wow.
And that's where the Christmas tree came to be, you know. So anyway, sorry to go from the Easter Bunny to the Christmas tree.
Well, that's okay. But let me just interject another thing here. That I was thinking about was jelly beans are all different kinds of colors. And I often wondered, well, okay, jelly beans, what do they have to do with Easter? But now it's obvious that they're just little eggs, and they're all different colors related to this hair, this crazy, wacky hair.
Right. And they taste good, too.
Well, yeah, they do. They give me a headache. I don't know what it is. Too much sugar for me.
Yeah.
So now... that's what brings me to, is there a story behind the candy, or is that just an extension of the gift of the egg?
Well, I don't know that there's any particular story behind candy.
Okay.
Specifically, other than, it's kind of like greeting cards. I mean, you know, it happens somewhere. It's a gift of food.
Yeah.
And in food and sweets have symbolic value, you know, in terms of growth and abundance and...
Well, in culture, any...
agriculture.
Sugar is always culturally...
highly valued.
Yeah, sugar has always been, well, at times in history, obviously something only for the higher echelons of society.
Right.
Know? So
I'm currently working on doing research on trying to develop some stories on the goddess of chocolate that I've just read about. And chocolate was actually used as currency in South American cultures and in Mexico. And interestingly, only the rulers and the male rulers could eat chocolate.
Huh.
In what we would call today like a chocolate bar, women were allowed to drink cocoa.
Huh.
But it was also used as a sacrifice to the gods on their feast days. And so that makes sense. It would give tributes of things
it's
high value.
Part of a ceremony of a holiday. I know. Here's another one. Tell us about the Easter basket. This was interesting. The Easter basket symbolizes something as well, doesn't it?
Well, definitely something to carry the eggs in.
Right.
I'm not sure I know the answer to that one. It strikes me.
Maybe I got this somewhere else on the internet, but the basket actually represents the rabbit's nest, because a rabbit doesn't particularly burrow or procreate in a cave or give birth in a cave. It actually kind of creates itself a little nest, a little rabbit's hutch, so to speak.
Right.
And so that's what actually the basket represents.
Cool.
How about that?
I learned something. Good.
Well, you'll need to research that more. That was just something I came across. I thought it was related to your site. Now, your site is, really pretty all-encompassing.
Yes, it did. I mean, it started sort of as a hobby. I really, originally, back when I was working, I taught at the university for about three decades and retired. And one of the things that I did at that point, I had read Jean Shinoda and Boland's book, Goddesses in Every Woman.
Right.
And it was followed by Gods in Every Man. It's a kind of... It was a brilliant book about archetypal psychology. Loved it. And I had a background in personality in my doctorate. It was in psychology. And I set about developing the goddess quiz. And it was the first, and it's to my knowledge, the only full-scale, scientifically based personality assessment that links a person to their archetype, a god or goddess archetype.
Ah.
And these were in the early days of computing. The first personal computers had just come out.
Right.
And anyway, I was doing these for friends, and everybody loved them. And I thought, this is a pain in the butt scoring all these by hand. And there's no reason why, that couldn't be done on computer.
Right.
And it turned out to be a lot harder than I thought it was, but I got a computer programmer friend to help me with it. We ended up spending 2 years writing a program that would do it. And then I thought, well, God, that's a shame. And in each of those quizzes in the report that it generated was the myth of the goddess.
Huh.
That a person turned out to be.
Now, let me stop you right there, because I want to inform everybody that my guest Sharon Turnbull is talking about her website, which is goddessgift.com. And so we've veered away from the Easter Bunny, and now we're talking about your site, which is also very interesting. Now, this goddess test or, equation,
right.
Are these different goddesses that it points you to? Is that what...
Okay. We started out with eight of them. I think we now have 21. Theoretically, the reports are so individualized that it can generate like 3,000 different reports, but that's in the detail. But there are a large number of different goddess types and the capacity to keep breaking them further and further down.
Wow.
Into different ones. And it's been fun, but anyway, as we decided once we had the quiz to go ahead and put that, on the web, make it available, and also just got into adding goddesses, researching more goddesses, ones from different cultures, And then we also created a site for men called Men Miss Minds. It's all with hyphens, Men Miss Minds. It's not as elaborate. It's got a site, and we've still got a lot more
There's really only two types of men, lechers and thieves, right?
No, there's sensitive new age guys.
Hey. Lechers and thieves. Yeah. Scallywags, yeah. Scoundrels, scofflaws.
Right.
Ne'er-do-wells, don't forget that.
Yeah, they're the heroes. And those Greek gods just about cover all those categories.
I know. See, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter if it came from Samaria or if it came from Tennessee. It's really all the same day,
isn't it? The same, yeah. Male and female.
Well, that's what I really enjoyed about my brief research into like the Easter Bunny was learning that these things are becoming so intertwined throughout the history of the world, you know, for lack of a better description.
Right. But that's the wonderful thing about archetypes. It was a notion, really, that came from the psychology of Carl Gustav Jung. And an archetype is really an image of a thing that is universal. In archetypes for people, like a good example might be the victim is an archetype.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't matter, every culture, every time, in every culture, people have a word for it, they have an image, they know what you're talking about.
Right.
When you say victim, or mother,
uh-huh.
or king, and these are all archetypes.
Huh.
And they influence our behavior. They kind of encapsulate it in our personality.
They make it universal, too.
Yes, they do. And that's their biggest use. There's the stuff we use in literature and movies and in music. They're tied in with the soul. And so it's a real fun way. And as part of my work earlier as a therapist, we actually use the Goddess Quiz.
Huh.
After it was developed, first of all, in a therapy group for abused women, it did some really cool things when we were testing it. When it allowed them to stand back and distance themselves and accept some things that they were working on, weaknesses and issues. It was almost like the older people will remember the comedian Flip Wilson, who used to do it. Character called Geraldine.
Yeah.
Hey, that devil made me do it.
Sure.
Okay. It was
that's an archetype. That's an iconic comedy figure right there, Geraldine
right.
and Flip.
Right.
That's the best.
And it was kind of like that. It let them get back and not dissolve into tears and more guilt than they could bear so that they could make changes.
All right. Well, let me stop you there
because
you are a therapist. Do you find that when people get a chance to step back and look, that there are things that they may not actually ever change about themselves that they would be wasting their time on, and that so this allows them to focus on things they can change? I'm just asking you that from a clinical sense, because you're obviously a qualified therapist.
Well, yeah, I think most things you can change or tone down. There's some things. Some of our severe mental illnesses.
Right.
We've managed to change kind of biochemically and only that a little bit. Maybe someday, through better biogenetic engineering or something.
Right.
Things will be more manageable. I think therapy has its limits.
Okay.
In today's current therapy. But there's an awful lot we can do. And what I've liked about the goddess approach or the archetypal approach in the way we manage it, that people kind of start out phase one is accepting who you are, discovering yourself, accepting, embracing that. It's real easy for some people. It was easy for me. because I was who the world wanted me to be. My parents were delighted with me.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did well in school. The teachers loved me, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so I got, you know, I felt like a round peg in a round hole. Life looked great. That's not true for a lot of personalities.
Sure.
Either the parents aren't happy. If I wanted a girl, I didn't want this tomboy. Or
right.
I wanted somebody more social. Why are you so quiet, you know? And why don't you stand up for yourself? And you start trying to wear masks.
Right.
And be the person the world wants you to be.
And that sets you up for failure.
Yeah, and it kills your self-esteem. And so that's kind of the first thing that people gain is kind of an acceptance of who they are.
Well, there you go.
And as they get older, they can start inviting the other goddesses in. After they've mastered that thing, they shoot, my goddess type, doesn't work too well in this kind of situation. I can give you a good example of that. I'm an Athena, so I'm a good problem solver.
Okay.
Good administrator, okay?
Right.
And my husband, who's a psychiatrist, comes home from work, buried under spending the whole day, you know, with problems that patients have,
mm-hmm.
and then comes home and expresses, I cannot believe the administration in my agency sent out this dumb memo today saying we all got to, yada. My first impulse comes from my Athena, my goddess type, is to help him solve that problem and say something like, Jim, you need to call your supervisor, tell him that whatever, suggests that whatever.
Is that what you do then, or do you?
Well, I have learned
okay.
not to. I have learned I need to say, take the back seat, Athena. Get me a band that says WWH do. What would Hera do?
Oh, okay.
What would what would Demeter do? One of the mother goddesses, and so I can say, oh, baby, I'm sorry you had such a horrible day. That's awful, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, tomorrow he might want to talk to Athena, the problem solver. What he needs when he comes home wounded and we're sitting at the dinner table, what he needs is to hear from a lover or a mother or, you know.
So just general support. Rather,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And so I can consciously switch gears. I liken it to being a stage play, and your best actress is the one that's your personality type, and she's going to be on stage most of the time,
mm-hmm.
and the most experienced. But sometimes you need the other ones, and you're the director, your mind is. So you can say, let's have efforts here. It's time for lovemaking or partying.
All right. Well, Sharon,
yeah.
as usual, I love one of the best things I found about myself doing this show, it's a very young show. We've only been on for a couple of months. But I find guests that blow my mind, and I could go on with you for another hour. But I have to talk to my listeners about the state of the economy and stuff like that.
Oh boy!
So I want to thank you.
I
want to thank you for being on. My guest has been Sharon Turnbull from GoddessGift.com, and I have a feeling a lot of lady listeners are on their way to that website. And I want to thank you. I want to keep you in my Rolodex so that as I'm going to explore your site more, and as I come across topics that I think that you could help out with, I'd like to be able to get back in touch with you.
Great. Thank you, Joe, and happy Easter to all of us.
Absolutely. Thanks for your knowledge. That was really good stuff.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And there you have it. Wow, we learned a lot more than just about the Easter Bunny. But, you see, Sharon, I didn't know she was a psychologist, a therapist, and all that good stuff, huh? I mean, I just thought she was a knowledgeable person about Easter. I didn't know we were going to get into, you know, the whole psychotherapy angle of it, but I love that because one day on Joe Radio, we're going to be doing some shows about psychotherapy and the history of psychoanalyzing people in this country and worldwide.
Joe Radio!
Worldwide for that matter, but that's another topic for another show. Whew! I love it though. The Easter Bunny. How deep was that? Honestly, I bet you didn't think. I bet you're saying, Joe, I don't care about the Easter Bunny. Now you do. Now you know more about it. And as usual, it parallels a lot of, you know, the Christian stories. So I think we've all learned something together. That was awesome. So, I'm going to take a quick break. Hey, we got an hour left. Call 800-636-1067. Anything you want to talk about, really. I haven't really gotten to the guts of the show, so I'll give the number out after the break as well. We're going to talk. I want to touch on this Elliot Spitzer thing. I really do. I have an angle on that you might appreciate. I also want to talk about terrorism a little bit regarding an event that happened this week. And the war is 5 years old, the cost of the war. I have a little more information on that. Also, you know, we can talk about the economy, talk about George Bush saying that it's going to get better, it's going to turn around. Well, of course it is. It's a cycle. Anyway, we'll talk about more of that on Joel Radio. Line them up, 800-636-1067. And I'll be right back.